So that's Matthew 27, starting at verse 50. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And the earth shook and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." There were also many women there, looking on from a distance, who had followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, among whom were Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. When it was evening, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who also was a disciple of Jesus. He went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate ordered it to be given to him. And Joseph took the body and wrapped it in a clean linen shroud and laid it in his own new tomb, which he had cut in the rock. And he rolled a great stone to the entrance of the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary was there, sitting opposite the tomb. The next day, that is, after the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered before Pilate and said, "Sir, we remember how that impostor said, while he was still alive, 'After 3 days I will rise.' Therefore, order the tomb to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away and tell the people he is risen from the dead, and the last fraud be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard of soldiers. Go, make it as secure as you can." So they went and made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting a guard. Now after the Sabbath, towards the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothing white as snow. And for fear of him, the guards trembled and became like dead men. But the angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here, for he has risen, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. And behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. See, I have told you." So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. And behold, Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." While they were going, behold, some of the guard went into the city and told the chief priests all that had taken place. And when they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel, they gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, "Tell people his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So they took the money and did as they were directed. And this story has been spread among the Jews to this day.
Well, thank you very much. Happy Easter, everyone. It's great to see you all. My name's Mikey, if we've not met. Well, don't you just hate it when someone is lying to you? In an age of fake news, it might not always surprise us that much, but when it really matters to you personally, if you're being lied to, it can be so, make us just feel so angry, so exasperated, so betrayed. A Well, I'm sorry to slightly dampen the mood on a lovely sunny Easter morning, but I'm afraid to say that someone has lied to us. That is the only possible conclusion we're left to from the passage that we've just read, because here are two different versions of events. Verse 6 of chapter 28, he is not here, for he has risen. Or verse 13, his disciples came by night and stole him away. Either, on the one hand, Matthew and the other disciples have lied to us, and Jesus didn't really rise from the dead, or the religious and secular leaders of Jesus' day are behind the most colossal cover-up in history. One of those two groups has lied to us. They can't both be right. Either Jesus rose, or he didn't. Someone has lied, and this really matters. Just think about it. If Jesus didn't rise, well, the disciples have given false hope to billions of people. Jesus is an imposter, like the Pharisees say here, and even every Christian who's ever lived has wasted their life. But if Jesus has risen, if he really does have the power to defeat death, that great enemy of all people, and people covered that up, well, would that not be the cruelest act in history? I watched a documentary the other day on the Holocaust, and you can see why many think of that as just the worst atrocity in recent history. It really was horrific, robbing millions of their lives. But actually, to rob people of eternal life beyond death, surely that is an even more monstrous crime. And so actually, that's how high the stakes are as we come to our passage today. Someone has lied to us, and our lives depend on it. In fact, the eternities of every human depend on it, depend on finding out the truth. Now, obviously, we're looking from Matthew's perspective today, so some might say this is biased, but what Matthew gives us here is evidence after evidence for the skeptic to test, evidence that takes us far beyond any personal opinion. So let's dive into Matthew's claim here that Jesus really rose. You'll see that that is the first point on our handout notes, and you'll see that we're simply going to work through the Easter events to assess this evidence for ourselves. So first, an unmistakable location. We pick up the story in chapter 27, just after Jesus' death on the cross, and we see Pilate handing Jesus' corpse over to Joseph of Arimathea, which by the way means they were certain Jesus was really dead. So Joseph wraps this lifeless body and then lays it in his own new tomb. But verse 61 is important. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were there, sitting opposite the tomb. These women, we're told, tracked Jesus' body from the cross to Joseph's tomb. They saw where he was buried, and they're the same two women who return on Easter morning. So this rules out the theory that people went to the wrong tomb. They knew it was, they couldn't have forgotten or mistaken it. We're told that Joseph is a rich man and his tomb is newly cut in the rock. It would have been quite impressive, noticeable. So an unmistakable location, but also an unbreachable tomb. Stealing Jesus' body would never have been an easy task. This great stone would have been rolled down a specially cut grooved slope in the rock to the tomb entrance. Gravity then keeping the stone firmly covering the entrance shut. But in verse 62 to 66, the Jewish leaders go to Pilate, the Roman governor, to make it extra secure. Did you see that phrase repeated three times in those verses? Order the tomb, they say, to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away. Pilate said to them, "You have a guard of soldiers. Go, make it as secure as you can." So they went, and guess what? They made the tomb secure by sealing the stone and setting a guard. Essentially, make it like a high security vault. It's like Fort Knox. No one is breaching this tomb. A whole guard of armed soldiers constantly on watch, and for good measure, some kind of seal around the stone as well. So an unbreachable tomb. But we move into chapter 28, and we see an uninventable witness statement. Uninventable witness statement. If the disciples had been inventing these events, well, they would never have chosen the first witnesses of the resurrection to be women, because women at the time, tragically, their testimony was seen as questionable. And that is just the first of many details in this testimony that just has the ring of truth about it. As surprising as it might sound, the same sort of ring of truth idea can just be said about all the supernatural claims of that first Easter morning. Verse 2, "Behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord descended and came and rolled back the stone." Now, if the disciples had somehow just managed to steal the body, all they would have needed to do was to say, tell people, "We've seen Jesus alive again." That's all they needed to say. And the proof will be that the tomb will be empty. There is no need to make up this dazzling angel. Angels are incredibly rare in the Bible. This would make many have just dismissed their claim instinctively. Why would they do that? And what about this earthquake? Why on earth would you invent an earthquake into your witness statement if there hadn't been one? Something that every inhabitant of Jerusalem could have been asked about. Clearly, Matthew is confident that no one could deny it. Rather, everyone would confirm it. And to top it off, glance back to chapter 27, verse 52, right at the start of our reading. We see there that many believers who had died were also raised. And coming out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection, they went into the city and appeared to many. I mean, imagine that. People's loved ones who had passed away walking right back into the family home, alive again. I mean, there is just no way that you would make up such public events. You'd be disproved immediately, unless it really happened. Unless this was God. The way to that tomb, that Easter morning, crestfallen and mourning. But in verse 8, they're on their way back. They are running. They are running, filled with great joy. And the other disciples, similarly transformed from cowardly deserting and denying to fearlessly proclaiming and dying for Jesus. What else could explain these radical changes unless Jesus really rose? So there we go. If anyone wants to say that Matthew is the one lying to us, well, we have to deal with all of that evidence. And many have tried and failed. One investigative journalist called Lee Strobel set out to disprove Christianity by picking holes, in particular in the resurrection. But after researching and analysing all the sources, he eventually had to admit defeat. He said, "I became a Christian because the evidence was so compelling that Jesus really is the one and only Son of God who proved his divinity by rising from the dead. That meant that following him was the most rational and logical step I could possibly take." And that brings us onto the shorter next point, which is really the flip side, ridiculous rejection. When word gets back to the Jewish leaders of what has happened, they frantically gather together in verse 12 and come up with a plan. They gave a sufficient sum of money to the soldiers and said, "Tell people his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep." Well, just imagine that claim being examined in court. And it's pretty easy, actually, to see how it would be picked apart. I mean, just imagine it. So, Mr. Roman soldier, were you sufficiently equipped for this assignment? Well, yes, we had a whole armed guard, fully armed. So what went wrong? We fell asleep. All of you? Yes. At the same time? Yes. Do you often fall asleep on the job? Of course not. First time. Right, well then what happened? Well, Jesus' disciples came and stole the body. Well, what did they have to do that? Well, they first had to remove the seal from the stone. Okay, presumably that would have taken a while, yes. And then they had to roll back the stone back up the slope. Okay, how many men would that have taken? Well, certainly a few. You couldn't do it by yourself. Okay, but you didn't notice all of this activity going on around you for this time? I guess it was a deep sleep. Well then, may I ask you, how do you know that it was the disciples? Well, it must have been. But how do you know? You just said you were fast asleep. You don't have any witnesses, do you? Or maybe one of the lads said they might have sort of stirred and saw them. Well, why didn't he do anything about it? Why didn't he wake you all up? I guess they ran away too quickly. Lugging a dead body? I mean, these guys aren't professional cat burglars, and yet you're saying they outsmarted, outmaneuvered you. Wasn't our finest moment. What consequences would you normally expect as a soldier for falling asleep and for letting a high-profile prisoner escape? Execution. But you face no consequences? No. And actually, by contrast, how do you explain the generous bonuses that we see you receive from the chief priests? I guess they were thankful we tried. I mean, you can see the whole thing is just ridiculous, isn't it? This story is about as watertight as a sponge. Unlike Matthew's version of events, you apply a bit of scrutiny to this claim, and the whole thing just unravels. It just doesn't make sense. And yet, verse 15, this story has been spread among the Jews to this day. Isn't it clear now who has lied to us all this time? I mean, just think, those Jewish leaders are confronted with all the evidence.